You are listening to the Paper Player Cast, episode 13. I'm your host, Tony, and I'm joined by my friends and co-hosts, Jeff and JB. Right now, Josh is not with us. He's sorting bulk once again. How did your guys' week go, JB?
I just want to know, how much bulk do you have that you got to sort this many times?
That's a question for Josh. I'm going to write that down right now, and we're going to ask him next time. How much bulk do you own?
Perfect.
Honestly,
he plays much bulk with do you bulk. Own? He plays with bulk every Friday.
Yeah, I guess. All right, JB, how much bulk do you actually own?
I pare down all my bulk all the time, and I don't really buy boxes anymore, so I really don't have a bunch of stuff sitting around. I mean, I have like a ton of boxes. I don't know what these are. Are these considered 100s or 500s? I can't remember, but I like have separate colored boxes for each like good cards that are played in decks.
They're probably the 300 counts.
Okay, yeah, 300, and I keep a lot of playables in there, so it's literally only playables. I kind of just throw away everything that I don't play or does not see play in like modern legacy EDH.
I got a box nearby you. Grab one and look at the bottom. It usually says the count.
Oh, yeah.
Hold up. You keep EDH cards but don't play EDH?
Because they might be worth something sooner or later. It's like the random uncommons that are really good in EDH. Sometimes, you know, you just get money.
That's true.
But yeah, 400 yeah, count.
That's usually the standard. Like, that's like the best thing for if you're going to sort individually by color. Jeff, you got any bulk?
Oh, yeah, too much. In my basement, I have a couple shelves underneath my receiver down there. And they're probably easily like 4 feet like wide and probably about 5 feet deep. And they're pretty tall. And all four of those shelves are just filled.
Are those 5Ks that you bought? Or are these like custom?
They're just shelves with like literally piles of cards is what I'm saying. Like boxes.
You don't even
like,
put them in a box, you savage.
Well, weirdly enough, my basement is like the perfect temperature where like cards don't really curl in my basement. It's kind of nice. Like there's just enough moisture and like heat down there. Like Josh even a couple times wanted to bring over some cards that like curled. He was like, can we keep them in your basement? And they actually fixed them. Sometimes it pays to have a wet basement. A lot of them are in like still in the box though of like that they came in. Like my Ikoria cards are in my Ikoria box and stuff like that. The piles are normally like I'll build an EDH and then get bored of it within like a week and just take it apart and end up shoving it on the shelf because I don't want to like unsleeve it.
Yeah, what I was imagining was completely different.
Piles and piles.
Dude, when I was growing up as a kid, all of our bulk, me and my brother's bulk Pokemon cards, we threw into a duffel bag.
Oh, I remember doing that as a kid. And then you wonder why they were bent or they wouldn't like shuffle your deck.
You know how much it sucks to go searching for cards? I just assumed that all of them were just in like this pile on top of each other. No organization. Like they're not structurally organized. And you're just like every time you have to dig for cards, you have to now like pick them up, get them organized and flipped the same way so you can find something.
Oh, yeah, I remember seeing that in your closet way back when we were kids with like the Yu-Gi-Oh cards too.
Yeah, all the bulk stuff went in there.
And how long have you two known each other? I've never asked that before.
Fourth grade, and I will not disclose my age. I'll never know my age. For all you know, I'm 20.
Yeah, probably. Damn, that ain't long at all.
45. You look like both ages.
Yeah, combine us into one. If we did fuse, I would be a normal size height person. It'd be nice.
You're actually not that short.
Don't tell me lies. You don't have to lie to my face.
I'm just trying to get on your good side.
Yeah, that's what everybody does. All right, dudes. So I thought there were actually going to be some spoilers this week, but I think what we got last week was just straight up sneak previews of the new set, which didn't really show too much mechanically. They kind of just showed some bangers of cards. However, we're fortunate enough to have in this area a 1K coming up in the next 2 weeks. Actually, it's less than 10 days out. And I wanted to talk about comp rules and kind of what to expect from those. So comp rules is just competitive level or rules enforcement. I think that's what it stands for. REL stands for rules enforcement level, and comp obviously stands for competitive and the difference between that and FNM. So we'll kind of go into like how to approach comp REL events, what to expect and how to prepare for it. And it's kind of a little bit different than tournament prep that we did earlier. For example, I'll just say right off the bat, like I've been to probably maybe a little over 100 comp REL events that were at a PTQ level or higher. And then I don't know if that's the same or true for you guys as well. Like, Jeff, what's your number, I guess?
I'd put myself right around 50. I've been to a decent amount, but have also missed way more than you have been to.
JB, how about you?
Probably like 20 to 30.
So clearly that makes me the best, right?
I think so. No at least comment. In terms of like following rules, probably.
I plead the fifth.
But yeah, one of the things that I experienced is there's been a lot of changes and what it kind of exists to today. I don't really know if we have a guideline anymore. I think whatever tournament that we are going to be attending is going to be mimicking guidelines, because there's nothing without a DCI, there's nothing to report these things to anymore. So if I were to let's say do something that is not in the good graces of Magic players, such as cheat in an event, I don't know how I would be held accountable.
Yeah, it's going to be kind of weird to think about that from now on. And I mean, it kind of goes back to what we were talking about when we were talking about competitive Magic as like a thing anymore, where you have these big tournament holders who now have to take the reins of taking care of what to do in the area for cheaters, right? Sooner or later, you want to hope that maybe someone like the NRG series might work with other game stores to host events, and then they have like the NRG ban list, and they might share that with the SCG ban list.
I agree with that. Like, one thing I was thinking is like they might still do slips for matches, but still have you like use the companion app, because then they can tie your like name and email.
Sure, I just make a new email, you know, then I'm a new person, you know what I mean?
I mean, fair.
It's not like they take like a social security or a driver's license. There's just the DCI, there's value to it, right?
Yep.
One of the things about the DCI system that we got was it could qualify you for Pro Tours or Planeswalker points. So you actually wanted to accumulate points. If you were some, you know, random person, let's say if I were to get banned in the DCI and I were to move for like for work related reasons or, you know, Magic related reasons to a different state, I could sign up under a new name. I go by Tony on here, but I could sign up under Anthony and then change my middle initial, get a brand new DCI. But the only thing was all the points I accumulated under Tony wouldn't transfer over and they would be essentially dead. So I could never play at like large scale event because you'd eventually get seen on camera, correct? That's kind of where it ends.
Yeah.
So your actual Pro Tour or Grand Prix wins get taken away from you, but you could play in low level events such as 1Ks or 4Ks, which is one of the, or 5Ks that are in that local area.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot different. That's kind of weird to think about.
Yeah, it's hard to hold people accountable now.
I mean, with a lot of the big companies starting up tournaments, we'll find out how they're going to take care of it soon.
And that's why I'm saying I really hope that they kind of pair together with some bands of the smaller ones in the area.
But wasn't it true when the DCI was around? I thought Star City Games even had their own ban list, though. Like, there were certain people that were banned from, like, their tournaments that weren't actually just banned on DCI.
So Star City, how, like, a ban typically goes, kind of the system of how it works, is you have to take whatever the offense is and then submit that to Wizards of the Coast. Star City was able to hold their own tournament, but they still submitted it to Wizards of the Coast. It's just that due process is kind of a while. It's not necessarily a court system, but evidence has to be gathered. Whereas if I'm a Star City organizer and I want to run an event and I blatantly know this guy's cheating, he's banned from all of my events, I'm going to submit that to Wizards. It's going to be some amount of time before he gets an official ban.
That's fair. Okay.
I just thought that was the process of that. Whereas, you know, DCI, for the most part, they were pretty fair. They would ask who was involved, get witnesses and all that. And that's for something a little bit more extreme. Or what they were trying to do, mainly with the DCI, it's supposed to catch patterns in people and to see if they've done this multiple times. And then they can kind of dictate like, oh, this guy's done this 2 times, 6-month ban. Oh, he did it again when he came back, 18-month ban. Oh, he did it again, lifetime ban. Like, it would escalate. Whereas I think SCG is kind of like a one and done. Like, there is no 6-month. You are out. You are gone. And in certain events, they could do that.
I'll have to look it up sometime. I'm curious how many lifetime bans the DCI is giving out.
That's quite a few. Like, anytime you get in a physical altercation, which, you know, there's hundreds of events happening every weekend, you know, you get one in physical altercation, that's it, you're out. There's no kind of coming back from that.
There's bound to be some idiot who does something stupid like that.
Yeah.
Basically every other weekend, I'm sure.
Wonder if they have appeals also.
You can appeal it. It's really unlikely for you to overturn it. And the only way to do it is like doing like a public apology saying like, yeah, I did those things. But then you'd have to come out and say like, yeah, I did those things. And then just forever be branded as famously guy.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Alex Bertoncini did it and he gets the nickname of, you know, Bertoncini. And he even came out with an apology and it was just like, he just wanted to do an apology so he could go cheat at another event. Cause he got an 18-month ban, came back and then cheated again. Some guys just can't shake that from their character, which is a flaw, but there's not much. I mean, at least there's a way to vet those individuals outwards. I don't think we have that ability as of now, other than what we're speaking of connecting through all different tournament organizers. All right, guys. So approaching these events, kind of a few things. Jeff, what do you do? Like, if you were going to go to an event 10 days from now, what are your kind of steps into going to that event? And what are you thinking kind of days prior to that, or how are you planning to get there?
So first thing, obviously, like after sign up is figuring out who's all going, because like carpooling is like a big thing. It does help. I always see the size of the event, because I think the size of the event does matter. If you're going to like a 400 person tournament is way different than going to like a 50 person tournament. Oh, yeah. Like the atmosphere is way different. The tight plays are way more important in the bigger one than the small one, I think. After that, I figure that out. Find out carpooling. Next is what deck I want to run for the format, and then prepping by like playing as much as possible. And just, I guess, constantly like watching Magic most of the time, at least like 2 weeks beforehand, just to be as prepared as I can be.
The reps are, I mean, that's all big things that kind of go into it. JB, I mean, have you ever gotten a deck list loss or anything like that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've gotten one in my entire time of my 20-something tournaments. I definitely had a misregistered deck that was 59 instead of 60. They had me move one sideboard card to the main board and put a land in the sideboard. And then I got a game loss, not a match loss.
Yeah, usually those things, I think those are still relevant of game losses. I can say this, I've been very fortunate, but I've never got a game loss due to improper deck registration.
I will say that when I got that, that was probably my second actual like deck reg tournament ever. So
you remember what the tournament was?
It was Madison. We went to Misty Mountain.
Yes.
Yeah, but do you remember this?
Or PTQ.
I think it was PTQ.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Jeff, have you ever had any deck reg losses?
I had one. It was in Iowa for a SCG. It was Sunday morning Legacy. I didn't get much sleep the night before because I was kept up by the people I was staying with playtesting, and I was running behind. Filled up my deck reg, handed in. Round two, they come over. They're like, we need to do a deck check. Judge comes back and he's like, we're giving you a game loss because you didn't write a number next to one of your sideboard cards. And I was like, okay, what did the rest of the sideboard add up to, though? And they were like, 14. And I was like, did I only have one in my sideboard? And they were like, yeah, which would make 15, right? I didn't argue. I definitely questioned it because I felt like a game loss was pretty harsh for forgetting to put a one next to a card that clearly I only had a one of.
Sure.
I accepted it, and I was playing Burn, so it like was really terrifying because going to game two with no sideboard, if I'm playing against anything that has like counter spell, or I was playing Belcher, sorry, not Burn. If I'm playing against any counter deck, like it's just over, like I'm done. But I luckily won. I played against a Burn player who had never seen Belcher go off, and he didn't understand why he took 47 damage. But yeah. We had to have a judge explain it. I did find out later that you could appeal. I never knew you could appeal game losses and like judge calls like that. Mm-hmm. Later on, I did start appealing calls more often, and I've had a decent amount overturned.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the big things, right, is judges are your friend. Something you kind of, people have always seen judges to be kind of like, oh, why are you calling a judge on me? Do you think I'm cheating? No, I just don't think you understand either one, how your cards interact, or I need clarification on what someone's intent is, right?
Yeah, a lot of time I think people think of judges as like policing.
Yeah.
Like a tournament instead of being there to help you to make sure you're playing the best you can.
I definitely had an experience where I played against someone where he mulliganed back when the rule was you just put the cards, you know, you go down to six. There is no scrying or anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he mulliganed twice, but he forgot to put a card back on this. You know, you put only one back. And so called the judge over. Judge came over. Guy got mad because I called the judge because he's like, can I just pick a random card for my hand? And I'm like, I don't know what to do. Let me ask the judge. He got mad and then he started trying to get the judge to come over for basically anything to try and get me. So we got in this little war of calling the judge on one another for like small infractions, which was pretty great. I think I got like three warnings in that one game.
Damn.
That's nuts. I'm surprised that for getting three warnings, I'm surprised that you didn't get a game loss. All the warnings must have been completely different infractions, which is bizarre.
Yeah, I think they were. It was just like not announcing, like moving two phases. And we were both playing Desecration Demon because we were playing Mono Black Devotion. Sure. And so you had to be very careful with the way you announced the demon trigger.
Yeah.
And so I messed it up. He called the judge. I got an infraction. He messed it up. I called the judge out of spite like a jerk. And he got an infraction. It just went back and forth.
AB, you're out here wiling.
Yeah. I mean, we were both 4-0, so it was like, it was a, we can make day two easily if we win this match.
Was that the same tournament you were on camera and you lost with Mono Black?
No, it was the one a couple months later. It was like it wasn't SCG. It was a GP.
Okay.
Oh, nice. Okay. Yeah, one of those things, I mean, that's one of the biggest things that separates, I guess, Comp REL or, you know, Comp Rules from FNM, just because the prize is usually a lot higher, so it draws more people in. The bigger the prize, kind of, or the bigger the tournament is. So, for example, SCGs are typically 5Ks, and they even got up to 10Ks, or and then GPs even got that high, too. So people are, I mean, don't get me wrong, it's not that the money is so large that you couldn't fathom it, but it's also not insignificant either. So people are there for multiple reasons, whether it's pride, whether it's just gaining money. I mean, if you win like the 1K that we're going to, I believe it's going to be divvied up. Or first, either probably should get either 400 or 500, which is way more significant than an FNM, where a typical FNM, it's usually pack per wins, or you run into something like, you know, $30 store credit, which is nothing to like be pity at, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm. I have a question for you, Tony. What's the most ridiculous moment you've had with all your tournament play?
I hadn't really nothing to do with judges. I have been angle shot at, and I have lost in consequences of that because I didn't understand. And this is like the beginning, so that would be kind of things I didn't get when I was, you know, first playing the game. As I grinded more PTs, I became more of that person, an angle shooter, and then I became kind of scummy. And then I've broken off from that because that's just not the person I want to play as. And I guess the most ridiculous thing would be, like, I remember I was playing against somebody that had Quest of the Holy Relic, and they just kept casting Mem Knights and playing Glinthawks to bounce them back. In the sequence, they were doing it so quickly, so they would play Mem Knight, play the Glinthawk, pick up the Mem Knight, put the Glinthawk down, and then take a dice and put three on their quest. And I was like, no, you get one. And that's like the scummiest I've gotten. Okay. I actually looked at myself like legitimately like in the mirror, and I was like, what are you doing? Like, you knew that guy is intent, and like it was stupid because I still lost the match regardless. I think it was game two, and I was like, I have to find a way out of this. I have to find, and it's just a bad way to go about like that. And to be honest, that is something that's still real to this day, angle shooting for sure.
So how would you describe angle shooting then for people who don't know?
The way I would describe it is it's not necessarily a way of breaking the rules, but kind of incorrectly declaring intent for your opponent, right? So landfall is like a really big one that people did a lot of times, where they would be like, okay, landfall trigger. And then if you didn't announce your trigger, you'd be like, okay. And then they would go to attack and be like, I have a 3-3. And you'd be like, no, you didn't declare your landfall trigger. It's a 1-1, block my 2-2. Something like that. That's angle shooting. Whereas, you know, they changed that rule, and that was also a huge one with Exalted. I remember with Noble Hierarchs back in like Conflux, individuals would play Noble Hierarchs, attack, and one of the legal things, and this is still legal today, is if you attack with a Noble Hierarch, it is not your responsibility to let your opponent know that it has all Exalted triggers until damage. You can wait to announce it. So, for example, if I have 4 Noble Hierarchs and I attack with the Birds of Paradise, and you block with like a 3-4 Restoration Angel, I can go, okay, damage, deal 4 to your Restoration Angel, and that is completely legal in the rules, even though those were triggers I should have announced. And that's like a form of like angle shooting. It's completely within the rules, but it's kind of frowned upon. And don't get me wrong, like, your opponent should have seen that coming, because it's like, why are you attacking with an 0-1 bird and so on. But, you know, somebody prior to that rule might have used like, oh, you didn't declare your triggers, therefore it's an 0-1. And now the rule is like, oh, it's a 4-5. Yeah. So that's like a form of angle shooting. I don't know how to more an example like that.
Is it, would you call it, I mean, obviously Magic players use shortcuts, right?
Mm-hmm.
Would you call it abusing shortcuts to get advantage?
It comes in all different forms. I mean, I've seen guys, and this is like why most people don't play foils, right? If your deck's not 100% foil, you'll get people like, well, I can clearly cut to a certain card or blah, 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 which that may not be true. But let's say, for an example, you have a singleton copy of a foil in your card because you decided to add a cyborg card, and it was like some random common from X set, and the only vendor that had a foil. And if it's in your deck and I was losing, I could make an argument to the judge and call a judge, and he's got a foil in the deck and I believe I can cut to it, show the judge that I can cut to it, and randomly just try. And then you might just
so scummy.
And you might just spike it. You know what I mean?
You know, there's you talked about doing prep pre-tournament, right?
Mm-hmm.
one of the things I do every time is when I know my 60 or my 75 or 76 in a lot of the cases, I will re-sleeve the outer sleeves.
I was going to bring that up. I think re-sleeving is a big part of preparing for a tournament because then you have almost zero chance of being like accused of marked cards. I've had people like say that to me before where I used like sleeves for like 3 weeks at FNM and went to a tournament and they were like, I think your sleeves look a little marked. And I'm like, they're, you know, just a little dirty. I apologize. And they're like, I've had people call judges before and the judges was like, there was no consistency to these markings though.
Right. I mean, even during a tournament, I've seen it where it's like at a Grand Prix where it's day two and you're in rounds 13 and 14. Your main deck cards get way more shuffled than anything else. Sometimes you've only brought in a sideboard card two times. That sideboard card sleeve looks brand new. And I've seen people literally go from day one to day two, sleeve their deck because they've lost on like rules infractions of, you know, marked cards because their main deck cards were just played heavier. So I've seen people go from day one to day two. And, you know, in that process of getting to that day two portion, they pre-sleeve their deck.
I mean, it makes sense because at that point you're actually playing for something real. Mm-hmm. So you don't want to take any chances when it comes to something like that.
Right. And I think the Wizards was kind of pulling away from that like super cutthroat mentality. When I started doing PTQs, that was like in 2010, 2011. There was a mentality of like a PTQ grinder that you had to be completely and utterly cutthroat. And it was kind of disgusting. And I think it put a blemish on the game for most people, especially people coming out of the FNMs that are going into like the PTQ, their first one. They would just get like, I'm never coming to one of these because I felt bad playing against my opponents. My opponents they did everything in the book that they could and they threw everything they could at me. And I had no intention of cheating or anything like that, but now I'm labeled as, you know, I got a rules infraction that would consider me a cheater as marked cards or whatever. It's like, it kind of just ruins that experience where they've pulled back way much on that.
And I think that's something that's interesting and should be said about when you go to a big tournament is you should recognize that you really do. And I don't mean to be the guy who's sitting here and like nitpicking every play, but you really need to be on point with your like announcements, your trigger stuff. Oh, and yeah. I know they kind of loosen that up a little bit to try and make it a little easier for you to do that for like the heavy tournament players at FNM. I let people do take backs. It's not a huge deal. It's nothing big. But when I'm in a big tournament, I definitely am like, well, plate's played, dude. We're there.
Jeff, why were like being clear on your intent?
Like being clear and content, like making sure to announce your triggers, like always make sure that like everything is visible. Like you always count. One thing I always do before every round, because I think this is another thing people get in trouble for a lot, is I always count and check my sideboard. I've had so many matches where people are like, oh, I forgot to de-sideboard. And like at FNM, I'm like, you know what? Fine. Like we're at the beginning of the first game. Like just take it out, reshuffle, like we'll play. But I've had people do it at big tournaments and like I call a judge, like, sorry, man, like you're at a big tournament. You need to be clear about your intents here. Like, I'm not trying to allow you to cheat. You know what I mean?
Yeah, of course. Like, well, it's part of the thing is presenting. And I am even at an FNM level. I don't call anybody on an FNM level, but just to keep in practice of it, every game before starting my game, I look at all 15 sideboard cards.
Yep.
Every time.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. Like, that's exactly what I do because, like, I don't want to run that risk of ever doing it. I've had it happen when I first started going to tournaments, and it feels terrible to, like, get a warning even sometimes. Like, you feel like you've done something wrong when it was, like, an honest mistake. So, like, to avoid that, just follow these practices. I tend to be really vocal about my triggers these days, like, because I don't want to get a warning or miss out on ability. Like first time playing with Drag Rage Chandler, the first two rounds I missed so many surveil triggers, but like after that, like I was like Drag Rage Chandler trigger, and I'd look at my opponent and make sure they understood that that's what I was about to do so that I wouldn't forget it and that it wouldn't look like I was cheating by just looking at the top of my deck without announcing it.
I definitely had a funny experience about sideboard stuff at a big tournament. I remember I was playing a couple of a card in that was mainly in the sideboard and most lists in my main board. And I had my opponent, after I cast it from my hand in game one, call a judge immediately and ask to get my deck checked.
I mean, I've played against some really honest people. I've had people go, I remember we were in round six of like states and we're both undefeated. And the guy goes, oh, judge, I have a flash freeze in my hand, and he just like, I didn't mean to. And then he just got a game loss and went on from there, which was like kind of like eye-opening, and that I think that's like what changed a lot of like how I kind of perceive Magic. But realistically, I've had people also where they keep seven land hands. I go land Thoughtseize, they concede the game rather than showing me that they had a sideboard card that they forgot to take out, which is really scummy.
Here's another one. Have you ever been in a situation where like a rule has been broken, but you and your opponent have agreed to like resolve it yourself?
I've never done that. No, I've always called the judge.
I was about to say at big tournaments like that, I definitely call a judge just because I don't like taking that chance from the stories that I've heard.
The situation I was in, it was an energy tournament. We were both 5-0. We were sitting at table one. He beats me game one. He's playing Spirits. I'm playing Arclight Phoenix before they had Arclight Phoenix. And we go to game two, and this is obviously before London Mulligan rule. And he mulligans from 7-6. And then when he goes from 6-5, he accidentally just drew seven cards. I didn't say anything because I didn't notice it, but he did. He looked at me and he goes, "I accidentally drew two cards. What are we supposed to do?" Probably call a judge. And he was like, "I think I'm just going to concede and we go to game three."
I mean, that was a choice he made. That was weird, but yeah.
I agreed, obviously, because like, I mean,
take your free win where you can get it, right?
When you're 5-0. Whatever they're going to do is going to be less of a punishment than that. And if this gentleman is willing to feel that he deserves a game loss for this, I'm going to allow you to take it then, because that's your choice.
That's exactly what happened with me when I was talking about that guy who we kept on calling the judge on one another. Drew too many cards or whatever. And what they ended up doing was the judge picked two random cards from his hand and put them on the bottom.
The only corner case I can think of rather conceding instead of calling a judge is in the case of that guy has already gotten too many. He's playing Phoenix.
Warnings.
He's got Faithless Lootings, and it could have. Usually it goes like warning into a game loss into a match loss into a DQ.
I was the one playing Phoenix.
Oh, what was he on?
He was on Spirits.
Oh, okay. That's really bizarre. That's a really bizarre thing. Huh.
He crushed me in game three. But
yeah, that's. I don't know why you would throw percentage points on there unless time was a consideration.
Mm. Oh, no. We finished with like easily 25. I mean, we were both playing because Phoenix was super fast back then because you could get two Phoenix out turn one.
For sure.
And like Spirits had Aether Vial and stuff like that, so they were fast. We were done with like 20 minutes left.
Yeah, that's weird. Especially if you're a table one, because you feel like someone would have been watching.
Yeah, it was only 9 rounds, but there wasn't. The people next to us, the one guy did look at us and he said, "Next time you should call a judge." And that's like all he said. And I was like, I agree.
You always call a judge. Always.
Yeah. But I think the other guy, he was pretty fresh to like big tournaments, because I had told him I got my deck list from MTG Goldfish. It was a budget list they did and I upgraded it. And he was like, "That's cool, man. The Spirits list I got was also from MTG Goldfish and I upgraded over the years."
Sure.
And he was like, "Oh, we're both 5-0. But he definitely like seemed pretty new to like the big tournament scene. So I think he was afraid of actually getting a judge called.
Again, how people view the judge is that, like you said the word police, which is like, I'm going to get punished. And not necessarily, they're there to fix the rules infraction, and they may come with negative consequences. But realistically, if it was an honest mistake, a lot of the judge calls or a lot of like the rules infractions have been kind of brought down. I don't know if you guys knew this, but GPs, day one and I believe day two rules are different. Yep. Day one rules are kind of lighter. Day two are like pro tour cutthroat.
Yep.
Yeah, they changed. They used to be always that way. And I think it was just like wearing on the judges to come around and just be like, "Oh my God, another like minor infraction that could have been resolved because some guy like sneezed and the top card of his deck slid and nobody saw it." And then they were like, "I'm calling a judge because that could be." It's like, well, you can't see it, you know, stuff like that. So they got done calling like for those like small petty or events. But I mean, one of the things that will benefit you in Magic is actually understanding what like judges are supposed to do. So like if you haven't done this, I don't know if this is still available, but you can just go and test for like a level 0 judge for like a store qualification. And then level 1 requires more. I don't know what the qualifications are anymore, but taking that test will actually show you your understanding of Magic is, because I can't tell you the amount of times I've taken that test and just failed like miserably.
I know they used to have a question on there. One of the questions that could possibly come up involved like a weird interaction with humility and another card. I forgot what it was. And it was like, how does the layering work? And it's like one of the most difficult questions like most judges have had to deal with.
I think I have a pretty solid understanding of like how rules are. So those ones don't throw me off. It's how do you handle this situation when a broken game state approaches? Like, I have no idea. And that's kind of like opened my eyes to like what a judge is there for, is they should know those rules kind of inside and out, and like how to handle, you know, warnings and stuff like that. It's like, I don't know what the next step is, but you can take that judge test. And if it's like a, you know, player A does this, what does player do, B do, would the stack resolve? I can pretty much manage those as long as they kind of avoid those intricate layering systems. But when it comes to like, what do you do in this situation where Sally drew 7 cards and it's like, oh, I didn't know that. And that test actually taught me a lot about that.
And also, if anyone ever wants to take that level 0 test and look up where to do it, you just go to magicjudges.org and they have all the testing information on there.
Yep. It's a huge list of them. The only thing I hate about them is like the 2 at a giant ones. I'm like, oh man, I don't want to think about
that's
this.
That's not a real format.
I'll play it once in a while, but man.
It's also only ever in limited, so I think like the rules are a little easier because someone's not coming with a pre-built deck. Like, it's really hard to cheat when you're playing sealed.
I would disagree with that, but
you know what I mean. Like, far as like you're marking cards, stuff like that, it's really hard to do that in a public area versus when I'm bringing my deck from home.
Yeah, I get what you're saying.
I did want to talk about, because we're talking about judges and how they're there to help you. Have you ever had a judge be overly aggressive or like police style or policing style?
For sure. I've had them at SCG events and I've called for the head judge and got them overruled.
Nice.
I don't know what their intentions are. People get on power trips. It's hard to explain, but sometimes a guy might have come off like an aggressive situation before and he's got another judge call and he's in that aggressive mindset. Not so much like to you, but he's just like that mindset of like, you know, a little air pack. Yeah. And then he might come at you in a certain way. And I think the biggest thing to do is have them explain the ruling. And I always ask them like, okay, why am I getting this? And it's like, okay, can you elaborate on that? And when I start seeing them kind of fumble and not know why they're elaborating on it, I think they are mimicking what they saw another judge did or do. And that's the only outcome that they know of. So I would ask for like a head judge instead of like, could I get, you know, who's the head judge? And then they'll come over and it's more of a learning opportunity for that individual. I'm not trying to out them, but it's like, I know that's not how this works. You're unable to elaborate why I'm getting this warning or whatever it may be. So I need someone that I think you're wrong. And I'm questioning if you're right and your head judge would have said right. And I've had it where it's been like the head judge has called the wrong ruling and it feels really bad. And that's just the way it goes. But there's not much you can do about that either.
Yeah.
I've never really appealed. So I've never had that experience.
I've only ever done it once, and it was actually my opponent who peeled. We were playing Modern. He was playing Tron. Phoenix played Chalice. I casted a Ancient Stirrings, and we both allowed it to resolve. And as soon as I looked at the cards and put one in my hand, I realized, and I pointed it out, and I was like, we need to call a judge. I called the judge, and the judge looked at me right away, and he goes, have you ever played with this card before? And I was like, I'm actually borrowing this deck from someone because I didn't have a Modern deck.
Sure.
And he was like, well, why did you let it resolve? And he was getting really aggressive with me. And my opponent actually interrupted the judge. And he was like, hey, man, I don't think he did this maliciously. He's the one that called the judge on himself.
Yeah,
and he made a ruling and it was like really obscure. Like he like wanted to, randomly take a card from my hand, put it on the bot or keep it off to the side, shuffle the deck. And it was like all this weird stuff. And my opponent was like, I'm appealing this. Yeah. And I was surprised. I was like, man, this is beneficial to you, but I really appreciate you being like a good person. And the head judge came over and he was like, no, technically we can't actually put any card back. It's just going to be a warning because we don't know. He could be lying about what he put in his hand.
It's hidden card information, but yeah, it's one of those rules.
Or no, it wasn't hidden.
Hidden card.
It's revealed because it's Ancient Stirrings.
Right. But if you would have put it in your hand and didn't reveal it, it's hidden card error.
Okay.
That's like the rule because you're supposed to reveal a legal target, and what you put in your hand may or may not have been a legal target. That's
got a game loss.
No, that's not what happened though. Like he saw that it was Wyrmcoil. That's what I was saying. It wasn't. It was revealed, but for some reason they wouldn't put it on the bottom.
Oh, weird. Okay, that's I'm not sure what happened there.
The bottom cards are supposed to be random for the non chosen,
but you would have an exact number
and those. Well, those 4 would also be back on top of the deck.
Yeah, no, it's, It's weird, but like what I was getting at is that the first initial judge just was like really aggressive and like severely thought I was cheating. And again, like if I'm cheating, why would I call a judge on myself? Like that just doesn't make sense to me.
Again, these guys are dealing with probably anywhere from like 10 to 20 judge calls in a round. If it's like a large amount, like 400, 500. So there are people who are just dicks in all walks of life. So he could have just been a dick. Not to beat down on judges, but the one thing that I get frustrated with judges more than anything, and this usually happens at like round 6, round 7, round 8 of tournaments. Yes, I'm great. Just a little, you know, ego boost for myself there. Just lifting myself up, saying that I am great. They will not, or they struggle to call slow play. And as the tournament progresses, people kind of get more and more antsy or nervous, and they'll start playing glacially slow. And I play at a very fast pace because I understand how time management works and how important it is not to get a draw. So I'll call a judge over and just ask him, like, hey, can you just monitor the match for a little bit and just check for slow play? My opponent will do one of two things. Either, you know, pick up the pace, which is what I want to intend. I'm not trying to make him go faster than he should, but he needs to play at a reasonable pace. Or the judge I've had just sit there and not know what to do because he feels awkward. And it's like, hey, I called you over here because I need you to make this rule infraction and be clear on it. And it's like, you know, the guy's playing blue-white and draws. Sits and thinks for 45 seconds, plays the land, sits and thinks. It's like, you gotta, like, this is unreasonable. And it might have been because my opponent at the time was in a losing position and he was trying to go to time. And it's like, hey, I need you to call this out for what it is.
Yeah, slow play is a rough one, I think. Like, it's hard to sometimes dictate the difference between someone actually thinking and someone slow playing on purpose too.
I mean, it's a really difficult one to call because, you know, depending on your actions, but you can't go in the tank per decision more than like 30 seconds. Like if it's once, even 30 seconds is a stretch. A lot of like your turn 1 through 3 plays, unless you're playing some kind of epic storm deck, are pretty, you know, land go, land permanent, land go. You know, that's basically what it is. And anything more than that, it's like if you're thinking of like, on 5 minutes, I mean, I've seen crazy things like, oh, I'm debating if I should go fetch land or colonnade on turn 1, and I thought for 4 minutes on it. That I'm like, you're just cheating. You are just cheating. Yeah,
that's unnecessary.
That's cheating. That's what it is. It's not, you can't take 4 minutes on making a land decision. But yeah, I mean, that's the things that you kind of experience at the higher level of the tournament it is. You'll, the farther you go in the tournament, the more people get a little bit different, more aggressive.
More angle shooting.
Yeah, I mean, we're all trying to achieve a goal, and it's not easy to do. Like, I've never been able to kind of topple a PTQ. I've top 8 of them, but it's difficult to kind of pass that echelon, you know. And people in like round 7 and 8 and 9, like, they just change, their emotions are changed, and every match is like, if I lose this match, I'm out, or if I win this match, I'm in the top 8. And that's, you know, an achievement that people can add, or a notch in their belt, you know. You guys have anything else you want to talk about with comp rules?
Nope.
That's all right, man. That's cool. I know we kind of went into depth on it. There's a lot to be aware of, and I only brought it up just because we were fortunate enough again to have that 1K coming up. And when that's coming up, I haven't experienced a comp REL event in, or I mean, we haven't in like what, 2 years?
Yeah, it's been over 2 years. The last one we went to is February of last year.
I guess the one thing I do want to reiterate is, remember that, I mean, I don't, again, when you're talking FNM levels, you know, take backs are fine. You know, I don't really care that much. Like, we can back up the state of the game like half a turn if you want to undo something, because it ain't a big deal to me. Mm-hmm. But you better believe that when it comes to something where it's like a 1K, it's play for keeps, man. Like, sure, the money ain't the biggest thing for me, but like, I'm there to win it.
Right.
And it's, you better be on your A game, because I'm bringing my A game, or trying to at least.
Sure.
Even though it's only $500, man, that's still half an underground seat.
Yeah.
Sad to think about that. I mean, it's mainly, I'm playing, the money's nice, but it's just like, I'm playing for pride. And because there's money on the line, I think it will bring a different demographic.
Oh, yeah.
More of like the people that are similar aligned to how I like to play Magic. So that it'll be different, because right now I've just been crushing FNMs every, you know, left and right when I go to them. So, you know.
Uh-huh. Sure.
All right, guys. I do got a question of the week for you. And this is kind of...
Wait.
Go on.
How much time have we spent already?
On what?
We haven't even talked about the decks we want to take.
I was going to save that for next week's and then get the posted.
Oh, you guys zoned in on a deck?
Well, I'm not going and Josh is, so like, it'd be better to wait when all three of you are here.
Question of the week. If you guys ever want to send in a question to us, you can always send it at paperplayerpodcast@gmail.com. We've had questions before, so that does make us legitimate now, so booyah. On top of that, I do have one for you guys, and this is kind of something I've thought about, and I know Wizards have tried in the past. If you could change the rotation process for Standard, what would you implement? Jeff, let me hear what you got.
Well, first, rotation right now is, what, six sets? Or, no, it's more than that.
Standard when we get out of it, yeah. Standard when we get out of it, it's 8 sets as a complete standard. So right now, if you're playing standard, you have 8 sets in there, I believe.
Yeah, it's every October, right?
Yep. You have the core set from last year plus the 3 big sets. You have the 3 big sets from this year plus the core set. So it's Throne, Ikoria, Theros, core set, Keldheim, Strixhaven, D&D. Is there something before that? Oh, Battle for the Zendikar set. So there's 8 right there. So that's as big as it can get.
I think rotation should be every 6 months instead of once a year.
What do you mean?
Like rotating sets for... You're talking about the rotation for like standard, right?
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah, I think rotation should be every six... like because it's only in October every year, so it's once a year.
Oh, got it.
So I think it should be every 6 months because I think... Especially in an age where we're like everything's digital and Arena is just making it where standard gets boring because you figure it out so fast and you can play 100 games in a day.
Sure.
Like, I really don't think you're going to hurt anything to do it every 6 months. You're still going to be able to play with the cards. People are still going to spend the money. But again, that does put a lot of strain on Wizards considering they're already coming out with 800 products a year.
Huh. All right. So it would be a lifespan of a set. Would be 18 to 15 months, right? So the first set would get 18 months. The next set after that would be 15 months because when the next set of whatever comes out, those two would get knocked out and in anticipation for the following set.
Yep.
JB, what do you got?
I don't play enough standard to really know. The only thing I want to say is they should have just banned the entirety of Eldraine immediately.
Agreed. They could have done it with Ikoria also.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I guess. I mean, Ikoria ain't that bad, right? It was literally just the
companion rule, but they changed it.
Yeah, so it's not that bad anymore. But I think like Eldraine has ruled the set for way, way, way too long. And it's obvious that nothing compares to that power level because it had multiple cards banned in old formats. Not just because they played funky with like a random card from the, you know, from
standalone, they were like too good.
Yeah. Yeah, it wasn't like, oh, there's this combo card that, you know, is from Ice Age that I forgot about until now. It's just literally like, I play that card from here and you're probably going to lose to it. Oh, okay. Yeah.
The two big ones are what? Once Upon a Time and Oko were like banned basically everywhere, except I think Once Upon a Time is still legal in Legacy. I don't know if it's legal in Modern.
It is not.
Banned in Modern. It's the card that I don't want to talk about it.
Mystical Sanctuary. Don't forget.
That's in Legacy. In Modern. It's loud in Legacy, but that's a Wasteland format, so that's okay.
Yeah. I don't know.
You can't really Cryptic Lock people in Legacy.
Yeah.
Yeah, we can buy back Brainstorms, which is pretty absurd.
That's true. Is it?
It's really good. Yeah.
I mean, wouldn't you rather just play Snapcaster?
Nah, because it's free. It doesn't cost you anything.
So you can fetch it, too. So you can go get it whatever the hell you want.
I think that's the mistake with Mystic Sanctuary. It was fetchable.
It says Island. Yeah, I think if it didn't say Island, it wouldn't be that bad.
It wouldn't be good. You wouldn't play it. I would just change. Honestly, with how fast Arena is, every time a new set comes out, the last one gets bumped out.
Every time, it's really fast.
it's every 3 months, but every set would have Ace or a lifetime in it. And you would just constantly see change because mana bases would be changing. For example, if we were to look at things that are kind of isolated effects, not something like Magecraft, but what is Battle for Zendikar? Is there anything that's an isolated effect that's only consistent in one area? I'm thinking landfall. When I think of this stuff, landfall. Yeah, so landfall, but that play like lands are played in every form or every set, so that ability kind of goes on. I'm thinking things like
Surveil, how that was only in.
Surveil's a bad. You're giving me just horrible examples here, Jeff.
What is Surveil still works and it does what you want it to. It just doesn't have any cards like
the party mechanic.
Yeah, perfect. Mm-hmm. I mean, that one works a little bit because you get wizards in all of them, but that's a bad
but like it's just not focused on though. Like,
let's just go back to allies because allies only refer to other allies, right? So we'll go back to like an older set.
Because don't some of them say allies or the creature type they are, like the ones later on?
I don't think so. I think it was always ally came out, and then the next Zendikar had Rally. And they were both, that was like the only time that we got a call back to the old Zendikar allies, but allies only refer to allies, which I think is like a great design.
Yeah, it becomes more like a block constructed then.
Yeah, yeah, but doesn't cards like lose longevity at that point?
I mean, they already do lose longevity, so who cares?
This is true. I mean, Mark Rosewater did say the most in his article recently that a lot of people have been complaining about how sets have been super isolated with abilities lately.
Yeah, I mean, let's just go back to Throne of Eldraine. Lucky Clover, it only works with adventure cards, and it doesn't work with the other seven sets.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Also, in Wallkeeper.
Yeah, those are like the ideas. So that deck would exist and then eventually be rotated out. That's a bad example because of how powerful Throne of Eldraine was.
Yeah.
Because of how nobody, and they're like the best split cards because all of them were creatures on the other half. So that was really good on them. But if you were to look at something like Magecraft, which you can play with anything because it's instants and sorceries, and every set has typically instants and sorceries in it. It's a mechanic that's like in that set, but it kind of branches out into other places.
Yeah, the only thing that scares me about that is when you start making everything generic effects, it breaks old stuff a lot faster.
Yeah, yeah,
for sure. As we saw with Smog Combo.
Yeah, dude, I do love when that happens, though. I don't care. Like, it only feels... I mean, this is my big rule. No free spells. And then number two, if it's going to be broken, don't make it an artifact. Make it have to require a color. I know Oko required two colors, but it produced artifacts, so, you know, same thing.
It also... It's because of Astrolabe, that card was in everything. If Astrolabe wouldn't have been around, I don't think Oko would have been as
I was about to ask, would splashable. You consider Astrolabe broken?
Yes.
Yes.
Good.
It was gross.
My favorite argument I always heard was people would always say, well, why don't you play the 2-drop one? It also draws you a card and it's the same thing. And I was like, you understand the cost of one jumping up to two is actually a lot.
Yeah.
At least also, in that format, yes.
Yeah, because playing Astrolabe turn one is why you were able to be able to play Oko in your deck. If you're playing it turn two, you're slowing it down.
Also being a snow permanent, which worked with Icefang Quaddle. Like it had a lot of upsides to it, and it was kind of just one of those things. And I mean, we can go into it, but realistically, if you're playing five color decks and playing Blood Moon at no cost to yourself, like that right there should be just alarms, right? Like
The reason I asked is because you brought up talking about artifacts being good.
Yeah.
And it's technically good, but it's also not good at the same time. I mean, it wrecked the entirety of Legacy, right? Because Wasteland couldn't exist anymore. Yeah. And the draw card effect was good enough to be like, yep, this is playable in anything.
Yeah, I think the only format that it's legal in now is Vintage and Commander. So
it's legal in Modern.
No,
it's I was going to say it requires one thing, it required you to play Snowlands, so that's why I was curious on your opinion.
It's banned in Modern. I knew it was banned in Legacy, but
thank God it's banned in Modern.
Yeah, it would be a mess.
And to be fair, with Oko around, Astrolabe literally was your finisher because you could just turn it into a 3/3 Elk and bash your opponent when you didn't
Oko,
need it.
Oko didn't need anything. That card was good on its side. It didn't need anything.
I agree. I'm just saying that Astrolabe did it all. Like, it drew you card. It made the mana color you needed to cast Oko, and then Oko turned it into a 3/3.
Oh, you don't like one mana draw card 3/3s? Oh.
Yeah.
Or it counted for your artifact count for
Urza.
Yep. It's just a bad card. It's not legal in Modern, it's not legal in Legacy, it's not legal in Pauper. It's just like not allowed. And good. I hate that card because it forces everybody to play, you know, three basic it was bad.
Four color decks. Yeah.
All right, guys. Last thing I want to end off with is a segment called Underrated, Overrated, or Properly Rated. So this is going to be in the lens of Legacy. I'm going to give you guys a card, and I want you guys to give me if it's either, you know, underrated, overrated, or properly rated. So the first card I want to lead off with is Force of Vigor in Legacy. What do you guys think?
I think it's properly rated.
I think it's overrated.
You don't think it's good in Legacy?
I think it's good, but my problem is we've had this discussion before. As a person who played it for a long time, I have come to enjoy, obviously certain decks will like it more than the ones that I would play, but like in lands, I see people playing it still and I look at them and I go, dude, Crows and Grip does exactly what you want. You have all the mana in the world, so it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
You should be playing Crows and Grip because you don't want this countered when you play it.
All right.
And
Crows and Grip doesn't kill two things, though.
I don't care.
Does it exile either?
I don't.
It does not. So. It destroys.
Yeah. I just think it's better because a lot of the decks you're going to be playing it against have the ability to counter your spells. So being able to get through with Crows and Grip versus basically getting it countered. Like, I've gotten it countered so many times that I'm like, this card is worthless to me every time I play it.
In that contest, I think decks are already playing Force of Will against you. So, and they're not taking it out because they want to stop your broken explorations on turn one or whatever problematic cards that you have for them. Whereas, like, maybe Force of Vigor, if Affinity was, like, a thing in Legacy, that's where you'd want it. But, again, I'm on the, for lands, Crows and Grip, yeah.
That's why I think, because that's, like, the only place I really see. I mean, Force of Vigor goes into a couple more decks, but, like, that's the only one that I really see consistently playing in the sideboard.
Next card, Daze.
I think it's underrated.
All right. And by underrated, you mean it's, like, not played enough? Or
is yes, it just, okay. I think that card is... I'm a firm believer that that card is teetering on should be banned.
I'm definitely in the same boat.
I mean, I'm with you. I thought Delver was the best one drop they would print, and then they printed two in Modern Horizons that are better that Daze completely protects.
Yep.
Yeah. Dragon Rage Channel is pretty good.
It's really
and Ragavan.
Yeah, it's really made that you had to be on the play like so much now.
Yep.
All right, Daze, underrated. Bada boom, bada bang. You're here first. Not enough people are playing it. Yeah, we want it banned.
Yeah, I think really more people okay should be playing it. Going. I think one of the best decks. I think it's the best deck in Legacy.
Now it is, yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. 12 Delvers.
Mm-hmm. Especially in a format where like they can sustain off 1 to 2 mana.
I was about to say, the craziest part is, if you land Ragavan and keep him, they're just going to lose. Whoever you're playing against loses.
You play all their spells.
Yeah.
Yep.
Everything.
And you're making treasure.
So you don't care.
Don't care if you're dazing and bouncing a land because you have a treasure.
Uh-huh. Yeah. It's crazy.
All right. Mother of Ruins.
Properly rated.
Okay. Yeah. I was about to say properly, too. I don't think it gets too busted. I think it does what it needs to in the one deck that it's played in, and it can really hose other decks' abilities to interact with that deck, but that's what that deck needs. So I don't think there's a problem with it.
I think that card's overrated. I think it's bad. Yeah, I think it's bad now.
Even with people playing more lightning bolts and like bolt, like the fork bolt shit.
Everything flies now. What do you care?
That's true.
Like seriously, everything flies. Like
even Dragon Rage Chandler.
That's what I'm saying.
A red dude.
My issue is I thought it was always more so to protect your creatures from removal spells, which is seeing a lot more play.
Who needs removal spells when you're swinging?
That can block.
Yeah.
Overrated. I think that card's past its prime. I thought it was eligible now. It was kind of hanging on, and now it's gone. I think it's done.
I'm still in the properly rated category.
Agreed. I don't think it's overrated or underrated. I think it, like you said, it does what it's supposed to do, and the people that are playing it because it belongs in those decks.
We got two more guys. I got Ragavan. What do you think of that one?
I think
underrated.
I think it's overrated.
Overrated? You think it's?
I'm kidding.
Legacy is underrated. More decks need to be playing red just to play that and bolt.
I think it's properly rated in the fact that like everyone is playing it. The very few people that aren't are because they don't have it. It's not because they don't or they don't want to because they're I'm not going to play the best deck.
Sure.
Ragavan, they don't
have the mana base to play.
Yeah.
Red whatever.
It's why I don't play Ragavan.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're lucky. If you have Ragavan, I think you're lucky that we don't have any GPs that are legacy based because I think after like round 6 and 7, it would be just Ragavan Mirror Mashes.
Oh yeah,
is that even like, really that bad though?
It's terrible. Mm-hmm. Mirror Mashes are so unfun to watch because like, guess what? The outcome of this match is 50%. The win percentage is 50%. You don't get to actually see like.
You can see people do cool plays and be smart about how they play.
I agree. I like different decks playing each other, but like I feel like a Ragavan deck versus a Ragavan deck is going to be a pretty fast match. Just block there.
I don't want it to be fast. I want it to be interesting. It could be fast and interesting, but when they're basically mirror matches, no interest.
There's so many things you can do too.
I actually remember watching you, Jeff, at Energy in the. The camera match, I think you were playing against lands and you were playing. I don't think you were playing lands. I think you were playing something else at that tournament.
Oh, he's playing lands.
Playing lands against stomped. Yeah.
But didn't he use his Thespian Stage to like copy your forest or something like that? Like, I just remember seeing.
He was playing Delver. He was playing against Delver, and we screamed after him because this is when Jeff just decided to build lands without playing more than four matches with it. Then went against the Delver deck, and then literally like didn't bring in any Crows and Grips because he didn't understand what Blood Moon was.
That's a real card happened. Against you, man.
Like a 50-50 if they got Blood Moon.
Still, the guy slams the Blood Moon in, and he just looks at his hand and goes, "Oh."
Yeah,
and nice, then I remember you fetch or you crop rotation in response, and then you were fanning your deck on. You're like, "Oh, I did leave those in my sideboard."
Yeah, we I looked at it and went, "I have no answer to this."
What's the last card?
Thoughtsies.
I think the card nowadays, I think it's overrated.
For sure, overrated.
It used to be underrated, and then it was properly rated. And now I think it's overrated.
I don't think it sees that much play anymore.
That's what I'm saying. Why, when you can just play grief?
But if no one's, I was about to say, if no one's playing it, how is it overrated?
No, people are still playing it. I just think it's bad. Like, when people, you can look at top 8 lists that legit do play it as like four of them, like, this deck is bad. How do you ever beat a brainstorm?
Oh, yeah, we're talking legacy context.
Yeah, not
I don't know why I'm thinking like modern. I'm like sitting here going, like, dude, it's lens of fine in modern.
Just the lens of legacy.
Yeah, it's bad in Legacy.
I think it's overrated in Modern, even.
Yeah, I think I'm also with you when you have Mishra's Bauble. I think it's real bad.
Well, yeah, you're just fueling my Dragon Range, Chandler. Thanks.
Yeah, I guess.
I take it back. There's one deck that wants Thoughtseize.
What?
In Legacy. Yes.
Yeah, that's it.
Because it literally just wants to make sure that it can do its thing on the next turn.
And or you could just play Veil of Summer, which they have to answer. A Thoughtseize will look at their hand. You can look at their. I love this is my favorite thing and why this is Thoughtseize is overrated. I'm playing some form of Force of Wills. You Thoughtseize me. I look at my hand. I have Daze and two Force Wills. Okay. Whereas if you just go Veil of Summer, I have to answer it now. Like answer it now or you die. I could just show you. Hey, this is what I have for Thoughtseize. And if you sit there and play Drago with me, I'll draw another one. I'll draw another Force of Will.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I think it's just it's like you play your four Veils and then you play like two Thoughtseize, right?
Zero. I would play zero Thoughtseize.
Reanimator doesn't even run it. They run Unmask because it's free.
Well, yeah. Now they run Grief.
Yeah, because it's even better. Yeah,
well, maybe they might still run Unmask. Who knows?
I was going to say with the whole Thoughtseize thing and the two Force of Will and Daze, what do you take?
I probably take the Daze.
Yeah, because that way they only have one counter instead of two.
Mm-hmm. They have one hard counter. I mean, you could save that on LED. You can keep the Daze, but then you're in the same boat.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's better to take Force of Will because it deals one, which, sure, it might not be the biggest deal, but it can matter sometimes.
Yes.
I love when I lose one.
I'm sure you do. As a burn player, it's the best.
Remember the time when you guys first learned that Force of Will couldn't pitch an island? Even though islands are the color of blue, you couldn't pitch them to Force of Will.
Yep, they have no color.
I don't think I've ever not known that.
I've known.
Agreed. That. Same.
I have not. I know. I looked at Force of Will. I was like, "Oh my god, you can pitch this to an island. This is the best card." And then I remember I built Merfolk and tried, and I was wrong.
Like, what are you doing? Like 2009.
That must have been the. Someone told me like what Legacy was, and I went and built Merfolk with only like four. It was like two of the Lord and then two of the other Lord. I didn't have a place out of them. And I was like, I had one Force Will in the deck. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to get you.
One Force Will. They were only like 30, 40 bucks back then, too.
No, they were less than that. That was
25
like,
bucks.
Yeah,
it was like 15. Yeah. It was great.
Yeah, my first play set cost me like 35 a piece, I think.
Yep.
Which still is not bad at all, considering they're like $120 now. All
right, guys. You can always check us out on Facebook and give us a like on Twitter and give us a follow. I do post random nonsense on there. And then, as always, you can always send us an email or any questions at paperplayerpodcast@gmail.com. See ya, dudes.
See ya.
Boom. I will say this. I have never liked grunge, ever.
Bro, you never liked Nirvana?
No, I didn't.
You just got to get into the shoegaze shit.
The what?
You're saying stupid words now. I'm done.
Like, what? That's not even English.
Stop with the stupid words, okay? Is that just like Asian people?
You got like shoegaze, you got like dream pop, you got like...